From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made in May of 2004 at a wedding. It was the first week that same-sex couples could legally marry, and those first ceremonies received a lot of attention in this country. By many accounts, Marcia Kadish and Tanya McCloskey of Malden, Massachusetts, were the first gay couple to get married in the United States. The Wall Street Journal recently profiled several couples who were in that first wave. Reporter Molly Ball writes in the Journal, quote, 20 years ago this week, David Wilson and Rob Compton entered into a marriage that some believed would bring on the apocalypse. These days, they are happily retired and spend their time volunteering and visiting with their grandchildren. When America's first state-sanctioned same-sex marriages took place in Massachusetts on May 17, 2004, Wilson and Compton's among them, a furious political controversy was swirling. Opponents warned that the consequences would be dire. Then Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney compared the court ruling that enabled it to the 1857 Dred Scott case that denied citizenship to black people. Both presidential candidates, Democrat John Kerry and Republican President George W. Bush, came out against same-sex marriage. Catholic bishops called it a national tragedy. Sure to follow, they warned, was the ruination of the institution of marriage itself and the American family and potentially all of society. End quote. But 20 years later, even stalwart conservative opponents of same-sex marriage say that the results have not been what they feared. Ball writes about a report that studied the consequences and says, quote, a comprehensive new research report by the RAND Organization finds that the consequences of two decades of legal same-sex marriage have been broadly positive for gay and straight Americans alike. The researchers who surveyed the existing literature and conducted their own analysis could find no negative effects on straight couples' rates of marriage, divorce, or cohabitation as states legalized same-sex marriage. In fact, the effect on different-sex marriages was slightly positive. Meanwhile, same-sex couples saw a range of improved outcomes in their lives, such as greater health and financial security. Overall, the fears of opponents of same-sex marriage simply have not come to pass, said the study's co-author, Benjamin R. Carney, a RAND researcher and UCLA psychology professor. End quote. 37 states had legalized same-sex marriage by 2015 when the Supreme Court's Obergefell decision made it the law of the land. The justices who voted in the majority in the Dobbs decision in 2022 indicated that the court could be open to looking back at Obergefell and overturning it in the future. And we got to wondering, who is the first same-sex married couple in Rochester? Our guests, I don't think they claim to be the first, some of the first. And they've got plenty to share about their experiences. Not only that, but, you know, with the court talking about Obergefell, where everything goes next here, there's a lot to discuss this hour. Let me welcome our guests. And welcome to Bess Watson and Tischer. Hey. Not the first of the first, but you think?
No.
Oh, you've got a strong voice, Bess. You got to get that microphone really close. I want to hear you real close.
Okay, yeah. How's that?
Not the first of the first?
Not the first of the first. We were the first couple to be refused a marriage license in Rochester.
I want that story. This is such a great story.
Real briefly, I mean, do you want to introduce everyone or you want me to just go ahead and jump off the ship?
I'm going to come back in an hour. I want you to host this show. No, it's great to have. Bess is a president of Pride at Work for the AFL-CIO Rochester Finger Lakes chapter, an admin for Rainbow Seniors Rock, which we're going to talk about, a longtime activist. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. I consider myself a professional lesbian, so we have that.
But that wasn't a title that I had for you.
That's what I, my labor brothers and sisters and siblings, that's what I, you know, every month I introduce myself.
Professional lesbian.
As a professional lesbian.
And Tischer, program coordinator for Rainbow Seniors Rock, longtime activist. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you. I'm also Bess's trophy wife.
Wait, you're the trophy wife?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Anne is the trophy wife. Charlie Lytle is a board member for Rainbow Seniors Rock, who's also with us. Charlie, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you. Thank you for being here. Charlie, tell people what Rainbow Seniors Rock is, by the way.
It is a group that is looking at the lives of people as we mature. And we find a lot of our friends end up being lonely. So this is a place where people can come to gather for fellowship and talk with other people about what's going on in their lives. We have different people that come in and support us. We have social workers that work with us. Lifespan works with us. So we're trying to make their lives better for them.
How do people get in touch?
we can go to our website. We're on Facebook. And now that we have our new home, they can just stop by and see us there.
Where are you?
We are, I'm going to turn to the ladies for their exact address.
We are at 346 North Goodman, and it's behind Village Gate in the strip mall. And we have converted an office complex into a senior center. So it's all spanking new, and it's just beautiful.
It's Rainbow Seniors Rock. We're going to talk more this hour about the value that this this group provides to the community. And but I do want to start with this story, because when Bess and I were first in touch a few weeks ago, you know, Bess was saying, you know, maybe not the first same-sex married couple in Rochester, but the first to be refused, even though there's a really kind of a touching story that goes along with that. What's the story?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we had a very public wedding in Washington Square Park put on by our church in April 29th, 2004. And we thought, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. And we, Ann and I, went down to the city hall to get a marriage license.
Back in 2004.
In 2004, yeah. Yes. It was because Massachusetts had granted marriage, and so we were thinking, well, we need to do this too. So we go into the city hall to request a marriage license, and we go to the clerk, and she looks at us and says, "For you two," and points at both, and Anne, you know, yes. So she goes to the desk of her supervisor, and her supervisor looks up to us, and she picks up the phone. She calls somebody, and like, we're going, I wonder what's going on. Are we going to be arrested? So in walks Carol Lee Conklin, and with her deputy Dan. I forget his last name. Was it Dan Smith? Or anyway, she has a packet of envelopes and about 6 inches high. And she goes, "We've been waiting for you." And she said, "Do you mind going up to our conference room?" And we're like, sure, whatever, you know, what's going on here? So this is the first time we have met Carol Lee Conklin. And she says, "I could give you a marriage license, but then I would lose my job. So find a way to sue us."
She told you to sue the city.
Yeah, she did. And she said, what we can do is get you domestic partnership. And so if you fill out this application, you know, and we knew that domestic partner is a band-aid on all the rights that come with a marriage. So, and Carol Lee was so cute because she said, you know, there is a silver lining. We send you the domestic partner benefit or partnership.
In the same envelope that a marriage license would go.
Yes.
She has been a friend ever since.
Yeah. So that was the nicest refusal that we could have gotten. And we actually invited her to our wedding, but she had another commitment. So she would have been there otherwise.
Now, so this is back in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And Massachusetts is legalizing. There's a lot of talk, and the climate is kind of changing. But in Rochester, obviously, you couldn't do that. You found out through Carol Lee that you can at least get this domestic partnership
certificate. Yeah.
Did you end up doing that at least?
Yeah, we did.
I mean, what did it confer any new rights or change anything?
It just
for you?
That you live together. No, not at all. How I got involved is trying to get domestic partner benefits. I worked at Monroe Community College, and Ann's mother passed away, and I had to take vacation time. Ann was had major surgery. I had to take vacation time, where my married coworkers were able to take bereavement leave and sick time. So this was a real discrimination that we felt. And we got involved because we felt it was an injustice. And I fought initially for domestic partner benefits. At the same time, Pat Martinez was filing a lawsuit to get her marriage in Canada recognized at MCC. So we were getting it at both angles. But any case, that got us involved and got me involved in unions, and that's how we started the chapter of Pride at Work.
So wait a second. 20 years ago, when all this was happening,
mm-hmm.
you weren't yet a professional lesbian. You weren't yet
no.
the best watch
no.
that we all know
no.
here. No?
No. No.
That's really what sparked it.
It really was what sparked it, being
right?
discriminated against.
And wow. I needed health insurance. And I wanted to get on her good health insurance. Okay. And it was a no because we weren't married.
Right.
We started, because she was a county employee, we started advocating at the county legislative meetings every month for 2 years. All right. Very naive. We thought they just didn't understand that people needed this. And every time they said no, we actually would dig deeper into learning new ways of being activists and how to put different pressure on. When she started speaking, she was so nervous. She couldn't read her speech.
Bess was nervous?
Oh, totally. I felt like I was sinking in the floor. Public speaking was horrible. I'd rather die. Not anymore. I could care less. But
so we were accidental activists, okay?
Yeah.
And we learned every step as we went along, and now you can't shut it off.
Yeah.
Now, I want to just make sure I understand something, Bess. When you said that Carol Lee Conklin said, we've been waiting for you, was she saying, we've been waiting for some same-sex couple
yes.
to come in here and ask for this
yes.
so we can start this process?
Right. Well, she just had, I think, had expected another same-sex couple before we did to come and apply for marriage license. And I believe that's what she meant.
So, I mean, that's really why, I mean, in some ways, when I was kind of, I read the Wall Street Journal story this summer, and I was thinking about this question, who is that couple in Rochester? And several people brought your names up, Bess and Ann. And I thought, well, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I think in some ways you are, because you got married, you know, in that service in 2004.
And that's the
it
anniversary.
It wasn't recognized by the government, but that's your anniversary, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're the first to go into City Hall and say, we want this done.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, in some ways, broke the dam here. Mm-hmm.
We did, and you know, and it's funny because Ann and I had the conversation early on that, you know, this is going to be our life. This is going to be the activism fighting for marriage equality. Are you willing to die for this? Because we didn't know what we would come up against. And we both said yes. Because when you're fighting for something you truly believe in and is what is right, it's easy. And, you know, in all the activism we've had, when you're out and open, you get very little resistance.
Right.
Visibility is so important.
So no regrets?
No, none whatsoever.
Ann?
That our job was to become the most visible lesbian couple in Rochester. And I joke that things changed, and I would introduce myself, hi, I'm lesbian, my name is Ann, okay? so literally, because people didn't know who was LGBT? And we learned after the failed marriage vote in 2009, they did analysis and they said, people don't want to know about, you know, you don't have rights and this and that. They want to know that you are like them, okay? That you have families, that you have bills to pay, that you suffer from the lack of protections, okay? And when that messaging changed, we started changing hearts and minds of people, allies built, and that's what led to successful marriage equality.
And it's important to note, it's the big benefits come through milestones in life. You know, Social Security, bereavement, where you sit in the pew of the church when your spouse dies. And those are the stories we would tell of people who have been together for 20, 30 years and they die and they end up in the back row and their family takes over and they're not even mentioned in the obituaries. So those are very compelling stories and they definitely changed hearts and minds.
This is a remarkable story. I'm really glad we reached out to Bess and Ann to not only tell their story, but in our second half hour, we're going to spend some time talking about you know, some of the recent noise about the Supreme Court wanting to go back to Obergefell and what that could mean. I want to know, Charlie, I mean, what were you doing in 2004? Anything quite as exciting as this?
I was working at AIDS Rochester at the time. I had been married with a wife, and I have two daughters, and divorced. And I was hired by AIDS Rochester because I had been married. I had children. My partner at that point in time was HIV positive, and it was my job to work with other men that were having sex with men to keep them keep them safe and their spouse safe. And from there, I went to the University of Rochester. And in 2010, Paul and I went to Connecticut and got married because you couldn't get married in New York. But he was getting sicker, and I needed him on my health policy.
Well, this was at a time where I think it's easy to take for granted now. I think that's one of the themes, by the way, of this Wall Street Journal story. They talked to these couples who were some of the first in Massachusetts to get married 20 years ago. And, you know, they're getting older now. We're all getting older now. But you talk to young activists, and sometimes they feel like it's kind of taken for granted. But this work at the time, I feel two ways about this. I want to ask you all about this. I feel two very different ways about where this country's gone with equal marriage. One is if you look at just polling, and I think I've got the polling has been not a perfect straight line, but it's really been rising for a long time in terms of support. So 25% of Americans supported same-sex marriage rights in 1998. Today, 71%. I felt like that was low. 71% according to Gallup, but you know, it's tripled in a generation. And so in a sense, it feels like it was inevitable. But when you hear Bess and Ann's story and you read the story of these first couples, I don't think any of it was inevitable. Like, it feels like you had to really decide to change your lives. You guys had a conversation about what was going to change in your life and whether you were willing to take that on, whether you're willing to do it very publicly, because you'd have to do it publicly. Maybe if Ann and Bess didn't do that here, there's another Ann and Bess out there that would have. And they're not the only ones, of course. But I guess what I'm wondering, and let me go around the table and ask this, how inevitable do you think all of this has been, or if not at all, Charlie?
Oh, it's changed a lot. Before I met Paul, I had a partner, and we were going out to Martha's Vineyard. So my sister lives right outside of New York City. So I called and said, we're going to on our way. Can we spend the night? And she said, sure. Well, the day before we left, my brother-in-law called and said, I know you're coming and spending the night, but don't bother stopping on your way back because I don't know how to explain this. Paul and I are together. We're down there, or they're up here. And my brother-in-law says, well, why don't you come for Thanksgiving? Well, I worked at the university. I had lots of hotel points from all the traveling I did. So I said, great, we'll stay at the Hyatt right around the corner from you. And he said, what, my house isn't good enough for you? It just took him years of seeing me in a relationship that was making me happy that worked. I mean, my children accepted my partner, and he finally did. Mm.
Bess and Ann, what do you think about whether this has been inevitable?
It actually took a lot of work to and changing hearts and minds. And maybe you can speak. What do you think?
I would say it was inevitable. However, it could have taken years and years and years. After the failed vote in 2009, we were told it wouldn't even come up again for 10 or 15 years, okay? Fortunately, there's always a couple of firebrand activists who won't take no for an answer. Okay, so Kitty Lambert from Buffalo, who runs Outspoken for Marriage in Buffalo, and I went down to New York City to talk to Marriage Equality New York to see what they were doing, Plan B. And so once we realized that this was, in fact, an injustice that we could move the needle on, then there's no stopping it. Okay, and I think that happened, and it certainly didn't just happen with marriage. Every step, you know, Tim Maines coming out as a teacher, every step, Charlie was early on an activist. We have a dozen people that come to lunch now that were all early LGBT activists, and some went to Stonewall. And so once the needle is in motion, you can't stop it. Now they can try, all right? But what I'm seeing is if you say no, people just learn another way around it. It makes you angry. That injustice doesn't sit.
And it did take, it probably would have delayed if we hadn't have done all the lobbying efforts we did at the time. If you recall, in 2010, it was a Republican majority in the House in Albany, and we targeted Senator Alesi. We knew that Senator Robach at the time was a lost cause on marriage, but we focused on him totally to change his vote.
On Senator Alesi.
Senator Alesi, by producing 500 phone calls a week.
It's 1,200 phone calls a week.
Yeah.
Let me just back up. I want to make sure listeners understand a little bit of this history because it's almost 15 years ago now. There's some listeners who may have forgotten or not know the story, but what they're describing is hard for some young New Yorkers to realize that there was a Republican majority in the state Senate that was led by Joe Bruno, I think. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the numbers you needed to flip somebody. And Senator Jim Alesi from the east side suburbs of Rochester was a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But why best did you decide? I mean, you said that Senator Robach you viewed as not going to happen, but why did you view Senator Alesi as possibly someone you could convince?
We knew, even though technically Senator Robach looked like he could be swayed, he had 38 conservative Christian churches in his district. He was never going to flip. We networked with Marriage Equality New York, Human Rights Campaign, Empire Pride Agenda. We knew.
Pride at work.
Pride at work, okay. We knew what was really happening, and they listened to us because we feet on the ground. We knew who could be swayed, and we were told by the staff at Senator Alesi's office that they had never encountered or seen any type of lobbying at the intensity that we did. We literally led the state in numbers of petitions, phone calls, visits. We took Senator Alesi's pastor with us to go lobby. Okay, I baked for him. I mean, there was nothing left to chance. Okay, and the reason we got into this is previously in 2010, the governor had a grass tops meeting in Albany for all the grassroots people. Okay, and said, we will do marriage equality if you can prove that you have a ground game. And we were already in motion, and we led the state. And
I would like to put in a plug also for the labor community, because our Pride at Work chapter did a lot of lobbying. When we were first established, our first 2 years for Pride at Work was building relationships within the labor community to get them used to the word gay. So I drank beer with blue-collar guys for like 2 years before I even asked them for anything. We provided signs. We were very good at providing visibility, and our signs are known throughout Rochester. We've done sign workshops, and usually labor community has actions that need signs, like contract negotiations and whatnot. But when it came to a press conference and signing on for marriage, all of the labor unions in Rochester, with the exception of one, signed on for marriage equality at a press conference, including the Locust Club and the Firefighters Union.
You had the Locust Club with
you.
And part of what I think you're saying, Bess, tell me if this is right, is you're thinking at the time it's going to be a lot harder for union workers or anybody vote against you or to decide to discriminate against you if they really know you, if they've spent just time drinking beers with you, hanging out with you, they appreciating your work, appreciating your friendship, and then all of a sudden, oh, I didn't know you were gay. I didn't know. I mean, you're a person to them. Yep. You're not just sort of this ephemeral figure that doesn't really matter. Those relationships mattered.
Absolutely. And it's so funny because I have so many stories of, I do my Pride at Work reports. And I had this one guy who was a plow truck driver, worked for the Department of Highway Department. And he came up to me and he said, my wife's son is gay. And I said, "You mean your stepson?" And he goes, "Yeah, my stepson." And he goes, "He's going to college." And I said, "Well, what is his major?" And he said, "Interior design." And I said, "Oh, so he's really gay." So anyway, I know that this driver never spoke to anyone. I know. I can say that. But and he just loved his stepson. He wanted to talk about him, and he didn't know how to even approach the subject. But because I was out and I was doing reports, it gave people permission to talk to me. And everybody loves somebody who identifies as LGBT.
Mm. By the way, you want to close the story on the Elise story, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we go off on a tangent here, but anyway, if you recall, the night of the marriage vote, Senator Elise was the first Republican in the United States to support marriage equality, and he voted yes. And that Senator Grisanti in Buffalo, because of Kitty's work and Ann's coalition, voted yes. And it was on, I'll never forget it, June 24th, 2011, that we got marriage in New York State. And I have you ever seen a legislation that has been passed where everyone was so happy?
Yeah, I mean, for people who weren't in New York at the time, there were a lot of parties.
Oh, a lot of parties.
Yeah.
And you have, like, Harry Bronson. He's been there forever. Been out as an assemblyman, as a county legislator. Matter of fact, he introduced Anna, he called our, when we were advocating for domestic partner benefits, he called our house as a county legislature and says, "Oh, you girls, do you know how the system works?" So, but he actually, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And he was a teacher that appeared and introduced us to other people for me, the union and how it worked. So anyway, that's the end for the Elise. And he ended up losing his reelection. But
do you think because of this issue?
I don't think so. I think there were other ones.
Do you think he thought he lost because of it?
I don't think so. I don't think he regretted the vote at all.
What do you think his legacy is?
I think he's the first senator to vote for marriage equality, and I don't think he has an issue with that. I would like to talk to him because I don't know. We haven't talked to him since.
We ran into a lot of Republican legislators who supported marriage equality, but in order to stay in office, couldn't vote for it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I consider him one of the great heroes. All right. He is a smart man, though. I'm sure he had a parachute all arranged, okay? But he was personable. He gave us the last time we lobbied, he gave us each a big hug on our way out and tapped me and said, "Be patient, it's here."
And you haven't talked to him since the vote?
No.
I'm surprised at that.
Well, when you know, we're not in the same circles.
Yeah.
You know, we live in Gates. He lives in where? Pittsburgh? I don't know.
I don't know where he is these days.
I don't know. I haven't seen him.
You know what?
Is he?
Oh. We got to put that down. We got to get Jim Elise on this program.
Yeah.
Just talk about his career and how he.
I would love to hear that.
I'm very curious to what he thinks about the Republican Party.
I'm
genuinely curious.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. We're putting out the bat signal. Someone's got to find former Senator Jim Elise, get him on this program. Charlie, what do you think of his legacy with that vote?
I took a lot of guts to do it. I mean, I was brought up in a Republican family, and that took major courage.
Mm. What we're going to do now is we're just going to break, and we're a short break, and we're going to come back, and I want to talk to our guests about. You know, we've been talking about what progress looks like and straight lines and a step forward and two steps back. So if you read the majority opinion in the Dobbs decision, there's a lot of talk about Obergefell. And certainly certain justices on the court now, Alito among them, would like to revisit Obergefell, the 2015 equal marriage decision. And so I want to talk to our guests about what they think about that and how they view some of the work that they've done over the years and what that work might look like going forward. This conversation really was prompted by that piece in the Wall Street Journal. They look back at 20 years since Massachusetts led the country in legalizing equal marriage in 2004. And so the journal went back and they were talking to some of the first couples to get married there. And I wanted to know who the first Rochester couple was. And Bess Watts and Ann Tischer do not claim that mantle. They're very humble about it, but in many ways they are. They broke the dam because they got married in a ceremony in 2004, not recognized by the government here. But in that visit to Rochester and City Hall, they pushed it forward and really kind of jumped into the activist work. So got married officially in 2011. Sorry, Rob, our engineer. But you got married when?
In 2006.
2006 in Canada.
In Canada.
Okay, 2006 in Canada, and then in 2011, New York comes along, right?
Right. But we didn't get married because we were already married.
Already married. recognized. There you go. So Charlie Lytle's here, a board member for Rainbow Seniors Rock. So let's get back. We're in just a moment. We're going to talk about Obergefell. We're going to talk about the work going forward. We're going to talk about Rainbow Seniors with our guests on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections. In our first hour, we're going to try to answer any questions you have about breast cancer, the latest on screenings and guidelines and more. In our second hour, Kyle Semmel, a local author, has his book, The Book of Lostman, out. We're going to talk to Kyle about the creating process, about what he hopes to accomplish with this book, and maybe a little bit of himself in the pages. Talk to you Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I mentioned at the outset of this program that some of the conservative leaders that the Wall Street Journal talked to back in May, when they looked at 20 years of same-sex marriage in this country, some of the conservative leaders they talked to said that, you know, it hasn't gone as bad as they feared. Ralph Reed, people like that who said, you know, 25 years ago, if we legalize same-sex marriage, it's going to destroy heterosexual marriage, it's going to destroy families, it's going to destroy society. And, you know, Ralph Reed said, well, you know, maybe it didn't do that. But, you know, he still doesn't like it. He still wants to, he wants to see Obergefell fall. But, you know, he said it hasn't been as destructive as he feared. And so maybe that's at least a good thing. So do you remember, Bess, I mean, what were the prognostications you heard?
Oh, dogs will get married. That was always fun. I was like, well, they can't really give consent, you know?
Well, so if we allow for same-sex marriage, then we're gonna have to let your dogs get married.
I mean, the arguments, I remember doing a editorial for marriage equality with in the DNC. I would support marriage equality, and at the time, County Executive Maggie Brooks was against marriage equality because it would be a burden on taxpayers, when in reality, the burden for taxes lied on the gay couples who had domestic partner benefits, because we had to pay outrageous amounts in health care. For when I added Ann to my domestic partner benefits.
I don't think I understand the argument. How would it have hurt taxpayers?
I don't know. That's just it. I think that was a red herring. I mean, you can't say I'm against gay people, so you just say, well, this will hurt taxpayers, even though we're all taxpayers. So I couldn't understand. But if you were to read the opinion piece in the DNC, I won, just for the record.
A married couple pays less in taxes than individuals.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, all right.
And so that was one of the big things.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's an argument that doesn't really hold water.
The dogs thing is really interesting. Our dog loves everybody. She'd probably marry everybody. I don't think that she would discriminate. It's quite an interesting argument. What else did you hear, Ann? What were the prognostications that you heard?
I didn't listen to many of them. By personality, okay, I have little tolerance for ignorance. Social justice is social justice, and so having worked my way through the women's movement, and you just don't listen to things that are not based on fact. And we certainly knew we were together by then 15 years easily. And we knew our relationship and our friends' relationships were healthy. we were all professional people, all right, teachers and nurses and, you know, contributing to society. We mostly kept our lawn looking good. And so, you know, we were good citizens. And we did not listen to...
Most often it was religious-based.
Okay. Yeah. What did you hear, Charlie?
Well, I kind of went back in the closet because my husband was very quiet about this. He didn't want people to know. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have the pride flag at our house and everything. Mm. And it took him a long time to come around, so I kind of just pulled back for a while. But then once I started working at the university and once I've really came out, I couldn't go back anymore.
Okay. Can I mention, talk a little bit about the importance of working in an inclusive environment? When I worked at MCC, I would have never been able to establish a Pride at Work chapter. I would have never been able to work for marriage equality and be so visible if I didn't have a safe place to go to earn a paycheck. And MCC was that place for me. Otherwise, I would have never reached my full potential. I can now do public speaking. but it's so important to have an inclusive work environment.
And it was the same at the university for me.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about where we are now. 37 states had legalized equal marriage before Obergefell in 2015. Still remember reading, what Justice Kennedy wrote at the time. And it was really struck by, I think it's worth for anybody to go back and read the decision and the opinions there. But this is a court that made pretty clear in the Dobbs decision that anything is on the table to reopen. And some justices have talked about Obergefell. So I'll go around the table here. Bess, how firmly do you feel like Obergefell is going to stand and that this is not going to come down?
The political winds are shifting. This election is so crucial. I really fear for our rollbacks. That's why the Equality Rights Amendment for the Constitution in New York State is important. So you can codify in the Constitution because laws can be changed. I really fear for the future. And yes, I do not trust the Supreme Court. I think that they have an agenda, an extreme right-wing agenda, and they want LGBT people to go away. And we're not going to go away, and it's not going to happen as long as I'm alive. So,
Anne, what do you think?
I think that the rollbacks on LGBT rights or marriage equality are just one of the symptoms. I agree with what Bess is saying. I think that we are facing a national wave of white nationalism, ultra-conservative stuff that I think democracy is under attack. And the attacks on immigration and on LGBT and on all these efforts to objectize other groups are just simply a way of advancing the far-right nationalist agenda. And so we're just one of the kids that are being attacked. So,
but Obergefell standing is not inevitable in your view?
No.
Yeah, yeah. Charlie?
I have to agree. I'm scared. I've been widowed for 3 years, and my new gentleman that I'm dating, we've actually talked, if things get too bad, we'd have to move to Canada.
That's an open discussion.
A very open discussion between the two of us.
We have people now that are leaving Florida and Mississippi and moving here because they either have a trans child or they're afraid of the environment that the states have for LGBTQ people. So we're seeing an influx of people moving here.
And we know people that have already moved to Europe, okay, to get out of this hostile kids, to get out of this hostile environment. So, here.
By the way, I saw you searching for a term. You're young enough to say boyfriend, I think.
I'm 73.
The older I get, I'm like, do we say girlfriend? Like, what do I do? Like, what's the, do you say partner? Like, is there an age cutoff you can't say boyfriend anymore?
I guess not.
No.
No.
I'm going to say no to that, Charlie.
All right. No, I'm glad we have that established.
Charlie Lytle is a board member for Rainbow Seniors Rock. And if you're just joining us, he talked about it a little bit earlier. But I want you, Charlie, to say a few words about why you think it can make a difference for people who need community.
If you're older, as I am, I spent 2 years just kind of sitting at home all alone after my husband died. And after going through what I considered a mourning process, I decided I need to get out and become active again. And I walked into Rainbow Seniors one day, met Anne, and I've been stuck there since. I've becoming very active. I'm out again. I have a social life again. I'm meeting lots of wonderful people. And for me, it's kind of a lifeline. Even though I'm not in a place where I was really hurting that much, I have family and everything for support, but it is nice to be around people just like me. And it's a wonderful group. I've made wonderful friends already.
Anne?
One of the things that gives us purpose is, well, our motto is live vibrantly at every age, for one thing. So we are a social, active group. But we fight isolation intentionally. All right, we have social workers. We send greeting cards to homebound people. We go out and actually take our program on the road to nursing homes or independent living. Isolation has as bad health effects as smoking, and 70% of LGBT seniors end up living alone. We are at higher risk of negative health impacts because of isolation, and we still have fewer supports as you age because we have fewer connections with religion. A lot of people still have family that rejects them. We tend to form families of choice, and we're all the same age, so we're all aging and getting sick at the same time. So this becomes not only a social group that we're trying to support, but we're helping people age in place, and we're helping people who have no other family to help them walk through this process of decline.
Beth?
One of the things I'm most proud of that Rainbow Seniors has done, President Obama repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell under his regime, and we had several members that were dishonorably discharged in the military. And we had one gentleman who I think Ann did the paperwork, and we were able to upgrade his dishonorable discharge to an honorable discharge. And he received that on his birthday. And he said it was the best present he has ever received. I mean, that's one of the few things that, you know, having Rainbow Seniors as an organization looks out for our members.
So again, if you want to get in touch, they've got a Facebook page.
Yes, we're also doing a fundraiser because we're moving to new space. And it's tripling our expenses, but I'll let Ann talk about that.
We actually are doing a capital campaign, and we have raised almost $80,000 out of 90 that we needed to convert this building so that we can do the type of robust programming that we want to do. Part of that will be doing working with Lifespan, for instance, and doing dementia respite. All right. Yeah. We're trying to set up transportation program. Most people don't realize if you live in the suburb, the day you can't drive, your life is over, your social life. All right. So we need to take care of those people. We also are involved with housing, trying to set up LGBT housing.
And if people want to donate to Rainbow Seniors Rochester, they can go to www.rainbowseniorsrock.com. And there's you can click on donation for capital campaign or just simply to give. And any contribution is really appreciated, and it's put to tremendously good use.
That's Rainbow Seniors Rock, and I'm really glad they had a chance to talk about that. I want to squeeze in a little bit of feedback from listeners before we lose the hour. Patrick heard Ann talk about, you know, all the things that you felt like you had to do to prove that you were good people. And he said, just the lawn, I could make your whole yard beautiful. He's a landscaper. So he's Meredith writes and says, regarding inevitability, I have been out since 1990 when I was in college, and I keep trying to wrap my head around the differential improvements in LGBTQ rights versus racial equality since then. It is striking that my dream of getting married came true while we are still seeing police brutality against black people. Kudos to our LGBTQ activists. Shame on our country for holding on to rank racism. That is from Meredith. You're nodding over there. Ann, you want to add to that?
I think that we are focused very narrowly right now on LGBT equality. Clearly, all right, trans people are under serious attack. Racial issues they're real, and we all need to pay attention to climate things. So, you know, this is. I don't know. We are trying to do it in bite-sized chunks because all we're capable of.
Sure, sure. Andrew says, our older LGBTQ plus community members have lifetimes of knowledge around activism, organizing, and agitating for change. How can we impart the lessons they've learned to younger generations to synergize with their forms of activism so it is not lost? That is from Andrew.
You know, actually, we went to a trans rally in Brighton, and we were so impressed with the young activists. So I think that I think we're in good hands. I think that the young kids get it, we thought we'd go there and give them tips on, you know, how to organize or whatnot, but they had the ball in hand and they were running with
it. Do they appreciate you though? I mean, like...
Well, we brought them good signs, so yes, they did appreciate us.
I asked because, you know, I was 25 years old once, and everybody, you know, who's maybe a newly activated person in any cause, and is young, and you're invincible, and you've got decades and decades of life ahead, and you think you've got everything figured out. I always wonder if there is an openness to share ideas and to learn.
In our experience, there have been open to ideas, but they have their own, and also they're better at social media than we are because weren't raised with that.
Oh yeah.
So that's a whole other different level of organizing and for social justice.
Every generation has firebrand activists. Okay, there's always something that needs to be addressed, etc. And we peaked, all right. But the fact is, it's a 15 minutes of fame thing, okay? And so we were replaced by others, and they will be replaced by others, okay? I lived with a woman who was a very early activist in Rochester, brought the Gay Liberation Front to Rochester, but her time was over, and it never came up. I never knew that she was an LGBT activist because the 15 minutes is over until you pick up another cause.
Yep. But I have to say that we have Evelyn Bailey to thank for a lot of the... everything that we did, a lot of the stuff that we did is in the archives of the public library. So if people wanted to research on political movements, Evelyn Bailey I miss her so much. She passed in 22 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And Jeremy Chung. Oh. Yeah, I love Jeremy. Yeah. He made one of the best signs. Call your senator. Yeah.
We would also like to call out the Rochester Rainbow Union. They have preserved a library that is worth going to in terms of research and I think it's the largest LGBT library in the country, you know, and we should be proud of that.
Very much so.
Jerry Szymanski. Yeah.
All right, about a minute left here. Jim, not Jim Alesi. Still waiting to hear from Jim Alesi. Jim wants to know why more gay couples haven't gotten married, and I had pulled some data on this. Only about 1.3% of married couples are same-sex still. I think that is
that's possible.
That, indicating that this is from the Wall Street Journal, LGBTQ people aren't marrying at a rate commensurate with their share of the population. About 8% of Americans identify as LGBTQ, according to Gallup, but it's a much bigger percentage of Gen Z. So we'll see going forward. But in our last 30 seconds, are you surprised that there's not more?
I am surprised, but marriage is not for everybody.
Yeah.
I think that there's probably marriages down anyway, nationwide.
I think that's correct. Yeah. Yeah. Across the board, across categories. Same man, not surprised?
I would question that. We know a lot of married people.
Yeah.
You know, and I would question that, but who knows?
Well, I really want to thank our guests for making the time. We'll, in our show notes, link you up with Rainbow Seniors Rock. It's really doing important work. Charlie, I'm glad to hear you're doing well. I'm sorry about your loss in recent years, but I'm glad to hear you're doing well.
Very well, thank you.
Charlie Lytle is a board member for Rainbow Seniors Rock. Thank you for being here. And Bess Watts and Ann Tischer, what a story. Ann is a professional lesbian trophy wife. And
yeah, I call her Attila my hun. I got to get that in there. If you know her, you know why.
Bess Watts and Ann Tischer, really the best. Thank you for being here. Thanks for telling your story.
It's our pleasure. Thank you, Evan.
We'll have them back here. I'm sure we will. From the whole team at Connections, thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.